We're looking at environmental health on the job on this Labor Day. It is the morning show. I'm Kate Archer Kent. A recent study found that a quarter of American workers can do their work from home, but these people tend to be in higher paid occupations like finance, like administration, engineering, and technology. Are you working from home? Do you feel stress, depression, or anxiety related to your work situation? Do you love your work, but the risks of COVID exposure run high? Tell us how you negotiate the risks. We're at 800-642-1234. Marissa Baker is an assistant professor in the Department of Environmental and Occupational Health Sciences at the University of Washington, where she directs the Industrial Hygiene Training Program at the Northwest Center for Occupational Health and Safety. Marissa, welcome to the Ideas Network.
Hello, nice to be here this morning.
Well, before we get to your research findings, tell us what defines worker fatigue. How would you characterize it?
Yeah, so fatigue is really just kind of the state of feeling tired, sleepy, or weary. And typically it results from insufficient sleep, prolonged work, whether it's mental or physical work, or also even extended periods of stress or anxiety. It can be either acute or chronic too.
And so where are we seeing it? What might be the causes during the pandemic for worker fatigue?
Yeah, so, you know, we're seeing it everywhere. We're seeing it across all industries, across all occupations. There are a lot of reasons why it's happening, and some have been happening forever. So it's things like long work hours, insufficient break time between shifts, people who might be working longer shifts or shifts at night with inadequate rest. But what I think we're really seeing kind of exhibiting itself through the pandemic is kind of the mental load of the American workforce has increased so much. We're now not only navigating our jobs, whether they be at home or still in person, but we're also navigating caring for children. How do we eliminate our risks for ourselves? And, you know, all of this can lead to quite a large mental load for workers, which is related to fatigue.
There was a study that came out in July by the National Bureau of Economic Research. It found that our average workday has increased 48 and a half minutes than before the pandemic, and meetings have gone up by nearly 13%. What effect is that having on workers?
Yeah, you know, I think especially for those workers who are at home, who have been thrown into this new routine that often is spending all of your time behind a computer screen and not necessarily interacting with anyone else, that can be challenging. And that also this feeling of never being fully able to separate yourself from your work. So you wake up, you check your email, you move down the hall to your office, which is still in your house, you're making lunch in your kitchen. And so it's this feeling that we are always at work. And even though the amount of work we might be doing in a day, we're not working still 24 hours a day, but it kind of feels like you are always in your workplace. And so I think some of that perception can just make us feel fatigued, can make us feel exhausted.
Oh, because there's very little separation now for people who are working at home between their personal life and their work life.
Right. Yes. Yes. That's what we're seeing is, you're always at work. It's hard to kind of have that separation of I'm leaving the office now and I'm going home.
We're talking with Marissa Baker, who researches worker health, safety, and well-being at the University of Washington. We're exploring employee health on the job on this Labor Day. What questions do you have about worker fatigue or the effects of mental health and stress on the job? How have you adjusted to the changing nature of the workplace in the pandemic? How do you go about de-stressing or unwinding after your workday during COVID? We're at 800-642-1234. You can email ideas@wpr.org. Marissa, how is worker fatigue different from feelings of tiredness or exhaustion? Because those are feelings that we can have, regardless of whether it's worker fatigue or not.
Right. So, you know, when usually when we think about fatigue, we characterize fatigue, you know, as kind of any root cause of this feeling of tiredness, weariness, and sleepiness. When we think about it for workers, we're not thinking so much about the cause of the fatigue, but more about the effects that the fatigue can have. And when you're talking about fatigue as a workplace issue, I mean, fatigue is a considered a form of impairment. You know, it's lack of sleep can, you know, cause you to act similarly to if you've consumed alcohol, where, you know, 21 hours of awake time is equivalent to a blood alcohol content of 0.08, which is the legal limit in most jurisdictions across the United States. And also fatigue can exhibit itself in the workplace, you know, as an inability to make decisions or react appropriately, irritability, reduced alertness, and in many, you know, occupations, that can result in a real risk for accident or injury. You know, especially if you're driving and you're staying up for a long time, that can cause accidents. So it's not the causes of fatigue that are necessarily unique to the workplace, but there are how it exhibits itself in the workplace can really cause accidents and injury. It can cause folks to not be able to make decisions, not be able to work and do the tasks that they're meant to be doing, which can then affect their work life.
You know, at this time when we're experiencing record joblessness, there is also this mindset, this worry that if you aren't productive enough, you might lose your job. So you better work as hard as you humanly possibly can or say yes to everything so your boss will value your work even more and you won't be on the short list for being laid off. How do you approach this mindset?
Yeah, so that's something that we really are seeing. And we're seeing it not only with fatigue, but we're seeing it with kind of any types of illness that folks might have or symptoms of illness. So it's this idea that, you know, I know that I could get laid off, so I'm going to work really hard. I'm not going to take the sick time I need. I'm going to make myself available at all hours of the day in order to show how committed I am to the organization. And this is challenging because often the reason that people are doing this is because they think that it's expected of them by their employer. So for an instances where that is occurring, that really needs to be the employer who is setting some boundaries and, you know, making sure that the worker knows that they can take the time they're entitled to without retaliation, without retribution. And so that really kind of just falls down to workplace climate. We need to make sure that workers know that you're only expected to work the hours that you're scheduled to work. You know, we're all working during a pandemic. We might not be as productive. Some folks might not be able to log on at all hours of the day due to other, you know, family expectations. So we just need, you know, we need to change the culture at the workplace level. You know, and there are things that workers can do as well in order to try to, create that divide between work and life, but really this is more an employer problem if they have been setting expectations that you have to work at all hours of the day, give up sleep, give up life in order to feel that you won't get laid off.
University of Washington occupational health researcher Marissa Baker is our guide to environmental health and job safety and the mental health toll on American workers now. Are you making concessions to your health and well-being to keep your job and stay in your occupation? How have you adjusted to the changing nature of the workplace in the pandemic? What do you do to relax and unwind? Have you found a work-life balance or has it been thrown out of whack from COVID? Join in at 800-642-1234 with your situation and your tips. We'll be back in a minute with Marissa Baker right here on the Ideas Network. Thank you. If you're just joining us, we're talking about the majority of Americans who can't do their work from home and the occupational hazards brought on by the pandemic. It is The Morning Show. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. University of Washington occupational health researcher Marissa Baker developed an index showing that 3 out of 4 jobs in our country cannot be done from home. And for most Americans in this situation, they run a greater risk for COVID exposure and for being laid off or furloughed. Are you able to continue doing your job? Are you worried you may lose your job? What new stresses have you endured in your occupation due to the pandemic? Be part of this at 800-642-1234. And the University of Washington's Marissa Baker stays with us. Marissa, I want to dive into your research here for a moment. So you found that the vast majority of U.S. workers can't work from home, but there is about 35 million workers who can. What stuck out to you in your study?
Yes. So, for the listening audience, I looked at which jobs, which occupations could be done at home and which could not due to the characteristics of the occupation. So those occupations that involve interacting with people likely cannot be done at home. Those, you know, that don't involve interacting with people, maybe rely more on a computer, lend themselves to being able to be done from home. And I think what really stuck out to me is the fact that 75% of jobs would be very challenging to do from home. You know, I expected it to be a slightly different divide. Maybe more folks could be able to work from home. And the second thing that really stood out to me is the characteristics of the folks who can do their work from home. In the paper, I talked about how these tend to be much higher paid, on average, up to $30,000 more per year in earnings than most of those jobs that cannot be done from home, with the exception of physicians and surgeons and some in the highly trained healthcare fields. What did not make it into the paper, but is currently being looked at, is also the racial and ethnic makeup and the gender distribution of those jobs that can be done from home. And we're finding that they tend to skew white, they tend to skew male. So, you know, really we're seeing that this pandemic is exacerbating existing problems for some already vulnerable populations and making it even more challenging, for them to stay healthy and both physically and mentally during the pandemic.
Well, let's take a call now. Barbara is joining us from Madison this morning. Hi, Barbara.
Hello. Thank you for taking my call.
Sure.
And I just wanted to say I'm a 71-year-old worker. I am able to work from home, and I appreciate that. However, my computer's always here. I have a lot of work to do. I work from 6 in the morning until 6 at night. And because of the economy, and our business is a international company, which we're being pressured by the corporate headquarters to get as much out the door as we can. And because of my age, I don't feel that I can, call it that I'm only going to work, 9 hours a day or whatever. A lot of times I don't even get lunch. So I don't think there's an easy answer to this particular question.
Barbara, may I ask, how long have you been in your job?
Well, I've been in this particular profession for about 35 to 40 years. I am right now at my present employer. I've been there 10 years. I am very respected, but there's no incentives not or to keep doing what I'm doing, but yet I feel obligated and that the work never ends.
Mm. Marissa, can you speak to Barbara's situation?
Yeah, nice to hear from you, Barbara. And I can certainly relate and empathize with how you feel. And so I think it's important that, if you feel that you don't have control over the hours that you're working, and that might be 12 hours, then it's important that you're able to at least take control over the hours that you do feel like you have to yourself. And, when when your 12-hour workday ends, make sure that you're able to have a break before you move into your family or personal life. I've heard from some workers that even when they're working from home, they kind of try to create a commute for themselves. So before they start working for the day, they might just take a walk around the block. And at the end of the day, they do the same and take a walk around the block just to kind of create that mental separation between, sitting down at my computer, and moving on to the rest of the day. You know, I don't know if you spend a lot of time on video chats, but that's something that I do a lot in my job. And I have found that it can be nice to turn off the camera when possible, because I found that sometimes not only am I focused on what I'm talking about with my colleagues, but I'm also focused on how I look and how I'm presenting. And so it's this kind of added level of mental stress on top of the work I'm already doing. So, you know, turning off your camera for certain meetings, if you can, or if you, maybe you already are, can feel relaxing as well. You know, and if you don't have time to take a lunch break, and that's just not possible, you know, think about if maybe once an hour you can stand up and do some stretching, or once every 2 hours, kind of try to integrate small little micro breaks into your day. And I know that all of this is very much in a perfect world, this is what we would do. And so it's very valuable for me to hear the real life experiences that kind of show, that helps me kind of think about how to make suggestions for folks kind of who are actually in the situation. So I really do appreciate hearing your perspective. And I understand that there's both external pressures and internal pressures as well to, you know, work hard and work long hours during this time.
And especially, I think, in Barbara's situation, where she's working with people in different time zones in different parts of the mm-hmm. world, who would expect her to be responsive in their time, in their time zone. That too can be problematic.
Right.
We're speaking with University of Washington occupational health researcher Marissa Baker about mental health and stress due to the changing nature of work during the pandemic. Taking your tips, your situations, your suggestions, 800-642-1234. Are you a healthcare worker or someone who still has to report to work? How have you been dealing with childcare and the new school year? Call in. You can also email ideas at WPR.org. Marissa, let's talk about kids. Workers are again juggling homeschooling as school-aged children may be going back to school virtually. My kids will start their day with a 3.5-hour Zoom meeting. How is homeschooling situations and childcare affecting workers?
Oh, it is so hard. I have a 4-year-old, so he's not in school yet. He's in preschool, but he's not in kindergarten yet. So I can commiserate some. It is so hard trying to be productive and at work and also, you know, caring for your child. And even if they're in the other room and they're older and they're self-sufficient on Zoom, you're still thinking about what they're doing. And are they doing okay? Do they need help? Do they need a snack? Do I need to go in there and, remind them to stand up and stretch or whatever? You know, so I think it's just this, again, it's this mental load of always thinking about it. If you have older kids, and with younger kids, it's you're having to be a more active participant in their schooling and helping to, you know, ensure that they're kept on track. And even if they are, you know, self-sufficient, that doesn't mean they won't come to you for questions and concerns. So it is very challenging. And I think that, you know, in a lot of families, it's being borne mostly by in heterosexual families, the woman caregiver, unfortunately. And so I do have concerns about how this will affect women long-term in their careers. If women are choosing to take time off or quit their jobs completely in order to care for children, that's going to have some effects. Yes, it is adding to our fatigue. It is adding to our stress. It is very challenging. And, it requires a lot of empathy, a lot of understanding from employers, an ability to work flexibly, an understanding that some days you might not just get everything done that you expected to.
I'm wondering, do you think you will see an influx of women leaving the workforce?
I do. You know, and it's interesting because, as I mentioned, that women tend to be in some more of these jobs that are done outside of the home. We know that there tend to be more women in what are considered essential occupations, but also women tend to, on average, make less than their male counterparts. And so often for many families, if you're choosing between who's going to be able to continue working, it's going to be the person who's making the most money. And often that's going to be the male in heterosexual relationships. So I think that, you know, it's important to acknowledge that women are having to leave the workplace now due to lots of policies and inequities in the workplace that are now really manifesting themselves.
Marissa Baker researches occupational health at the University of Washington. We're looking at workplaces amid the pandemic, the consequences for workers who can't work from home. What has happened to your job? How has it changed in the past 6 months? Are you worried about your long-term mental health as a pandemic wears on? And what about your kids? 800-642-1234. We'll be back after a news update with Marissa Baker here on the Ideas Network. We're talking about workplace protections and the inability for most Americans to work from home. It is The Morning Show. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. Only about a quarter of the U.S. workforce is in jobs that can be readily done at home. Research from the University of Washington found roughly 35 million people are working in higher paid occupations like finance and computers, engineering and technology. But one in five workers is in a job involving a high degree of interaction with the public and a lesser use of computers. What disruption has the pandemic caused in your line of work? How is your mental health holding up as you work to keep your job? Be part of this. 800-642-1234. University of Washington Assistant Professor in the Department of Environmental and Occupational Health Sciences, Marissa Baker, is our guide. Marissa, looking at the people who can't work from home, it is interesting how you found how computers were kind of that division point for the people who could and couldn't do their job remotely. And it reminded me of that whole digital divide that we were talking about even way back in the 90s.
Yes, that's a good point. So what I did find in my research is that those who, you know, rely heavily on a computer for work and consider their computer very important to their work are more likely to be able to do that job at home simply because the computer, you know, can be transferred home and kind of the office space can be moved to a home setting. You know, and certainly this does remind us of the digital divide. And, you know, we're confronting that now as we move to online school as well, kind of. And it's not only around who has access to a computer, but also who knows how to use it effectively and use it to do work. So, you know, I do think that often, even now, with the more ubiquitous nature of computers and the internet, you know, there are still folks who don't have access, and there are still jobs that do not rely on it. And that, you know, does create a difference in who's able to, you know, adapt easily or move their job to a different setting more readily.
And for those people who cannot move their job readily to a different setting, you also found that people who couldn't were more inclined to be faced with perhaps layoffs and furloughs. What connection are you making there?
Yeah, so of the 75% of workers who cannot easily do their job at home, they really fall into two buckets. One bucket is folks who are in essential occupations, you know, think healthcare, who, regardless of the fact that a pandemic is raging, still have to continue to go to work. So for those folks, you know, and it's people in transportation, people in protective services like firefighters, police officers, folks in healthcare, they are having to go to work during a pandemic. So they risk increased exposure, not only from their coworkers, but also from the public that they serve, you know, with a higher risk of contracting the COVID-19. However, then there are workers who cannot do their job at home, like people who work in a restaurant or people who work in retail. But because of the pandemic, their workplace was shut down or changed considerably. I think of restaurants that moved from, you know, maybe having a full wait staff and a full kitchen staff to only being open for takeout and maybe only having one or two workers. So these are the workers who cannot do their job at home, but also really can't do their job out where they were used to doing their job. And so they're likely to face layoff or furlough or just general feelings of job insecurity, which can be extremely stressful. And experiencing job displacement, so those layoff and furlough events, is also extremely stressful. And we know that it's related to anxiety, stress. It could be related to substance abuse, suboptimal nutrition. So, you know, kind of this large majority of workers who cannot do their jobs at home, they're mostly into two buckets of either increased exposure to COVID-19, but still going to a job, or not having a job to go to and facing, you know, job insecurity and job displacement.
What are your suggestions for that feeling of job insecurity? Because we've seen really high numbers in recent surveys that job insecurity is a real thing. It is existing out there among people in a vast array of different occupations and disciplines. What are your suggestions there?
Yeah, it is very tricky, isn't it? And it's rampant, you're right. It spans industries and occupations. And unfortunately, I feel like the protections need to come from regulatory standards and policies. It's going to be hard to piece together kind of a workplace by workplace policy that helps everybody equally. And so when we saw that extra $600 a week in employment insurance, that was valuable. That kind of, even for folks who are feeling concerned about losing their job, they see that, you know, they would still be able to provide for their family and they would still be able to pay their rent. So that's valuable. The other kind of policy that I think could be effective and what was actually utilized in much of Europe is, instead of paying the workers not to work or, you know, to be laid off, incentivize the companies to stay open. So the federal government paying these businesses to ensure that they can in turn continue to pay their workers. Here in the United States, our healthcare is very linked with our employment for most people. So there is value to being able to maintain that employee-employer relationship, even if you're not actively working. And so kind of a policy where we can pay the businesses to keep them open and continue to pay their workers, even if they're not working, that kind of helps workers maintain access to some other benefits that they were receiving from the workplace as well, and kind of paves the way for long-term viability of these workplaces.
If you're just joining us, we're talking with University of Washington occupational health and safety researcher Marissa Baker about the changing nature of work during the pandemic and how workers are coping. And with your situation, your stories, do you work from home? Where did you set up your work area? How do you separate your home life from your work life? Are you an essential worker? Do you go out each day and leave your home? What is that like? And have you been noticing fatigue at work and on the job, especially around personal protective equipment? Join in at 800-642-1234. You can email ideas at WPR.org. Marissa, you know, the cornerstone now in occupational safety seems to be PPE, having enough personal protective equipment on the job at work to be able to get your job done. As an occupational researcher, where are we at with PPE and making sure that it is available and that it's being used appropriately on the job?
Yeah, so, I think it's still not easy to come by one of those N95 masks. But the good news is, for most workers, the N95 mask is not necessary. There are other good alternatives. We do need to discuss compliance a little bit. It's hard to wear a mask all day, especially if it's not something you're used to doing. As someone who's been trained as an industrial hygienist, I have often gone into workplaces and reminded workers, you need to wear a mask, you need to wear a mask, pre-pandemic. And now that I myself am confronted with wearing a mask anytime I leave my house, I suddenly realize that, you know, the reason why these workers were not wearing a mask is because it's uncomfortable and it's hard and it's hot. So it can be hard to comply with that. And then wearing the correct mask and knowing which one to select is also a challenge. So, you know, during the pandemic, I've worked with several workplaces to kind of refine their return to work plan and make suggestions for how to, you know, keep their workers safe as they return to work and also around their PPE. And I think there's a couple things that are very important anytime we're asking people to wear PPE in a workplace. One, you know, they need to have adequate training and have a chance to have their questions answered. They need to know how to don and doff it, you know, put it on and take it off, how to properly clean it. But they also need to have a place where they don't have to wear it. And I think that's important now. An area that's, you know, far from sight, far from people, where they can take it off and take a break. I think that's very important, because wearing it all day, you're going to start putting it below your nose. You're going to start taking it off. And if you can take some breaks throughout the day, you're more likely to be able to wear it appropriately when you actually need to. So when you're around other people, whether they're other workers or the public.
I'm wondering, in the companies you work with, do you feel like they're able to get up to speed very quickly if they've never been a site where mask wearing was the norm?
Yeah, that's a great question. So early in the pandemic, I did a survey of small businesses out here in the Pacific Northwest. And those that we consider goods producing, so they're manufacturing, their material moving, production, for them, it was not as big of a challenge, because they're used to wearing PPE, they're used to having controls, they're used to kind of rapidly adapting to changing exposures in the workplace. The employers that expressed challenges and concerns tended to be in what we call the services providing industries. So that could be retail, restaurants, those who work in banks. So for folks who kind of just were not used to wearing this, that's definitely true. It's been a little bit of a tougher ramping up period for the workplaces that are not used to these types of controls.
We're talking about occupational health effects amid COVID-19 with University of Washington occupational health researcher Marissa Baker as our guide. Are you experiencing anxiety or depression due to fear of losing your job or the added stress of doing a lot of more Zoom meetings? How are you working through this? What protections is your employer providing? Is your employer being responsive or reactive to the changing needs of workers at this time? Still time to talk. 800-642-1234. Back in a minute with Marissa Baker here on the Ideas Network. It's the morning show. I'm Kate Archer Kent. Let's get back to our conversation with University of Washington occupational health and safety researcher Marissa Baker. Her recent study found most Americans cannot work from home, and that poses a variety of risks. Meanwhile, a study published recently in the American Medical Association journal JAMA Network Open, it found nearly a quarter of people in the U.S. are experiencing symptoms of depression, nearly three times the number before the COVID-19 pandemic began. We have a comment here from a listener emailed us to say they're a massage therapist who works at a very busy resort spa about 7 to 8 hours a day. They returned to work after their business was closed for 2.5 months, and they work with strangers in poorly ventilated rooms and wear masks. They can't quit the spa and make enough money making house calls, and they've tried distractions from stress that is causing serious health problems. But social media, podcasts isn't very helpful, and they don't like to hear how bored people are at home and watching movies. This listener didn't give their name, but Marissa, what can you speak to a massage therapist at this time?
Yeah, so I can start with saying being able to work from home during a pandemic is the ultimate privilege. So to anybody who is out there, you know, working in workplaces, you know, I can completely understand that you are going to be stressed, you're going to be frustrated, and in some ways you're probably going to be angry at those who, you know, are able to work from home, especially when you hear people working from home complaining about, you know, how hard it's been working from home, you know, and so, you know, I completely recognize and understand that. You know, the other thing is, it does not sound like the work conditions that you have to work in are very effective for, you know, controlling potential exposure to the virus. You know, and there are controls and things that could be done in terms of increasing ventilation. You know, given the nature of the work, I'm sure it's hard to keep windows and doors open because you don't want your customers to feel uncomfortable or exposed. You know, but really it's a challenge because you're basically having to choose between potentially being exposed at work or quitting your job, which you've trained for and which maybe you even love. So that's hard. You know, so it's hard for me to kind of come up with things that will adequately address the very real concerns that that were expressed. But I do think that to the extent that the workers can kind of team together and talk to someone in management, and even something is like, hey, could you bring in a consultant to help with our ventilation? Or could you look into getting us more protective masks? Maybe this is a job that needs those N95s if they're in close proximity to workers and there's poor ventilation, you know, or maybe it's just even how can we make sure that we're limiting the number of people coming in and out? So often I've found that some of the best ideas come from the workers themselves, and to the extent that they can kind of team up and present some ideas and concerns to management, sometimes there can be some changes that will help alleviate some of that stress, but it's certainly a challenge.
Let's bring in Linda now, who's joining us from Cedar Rapids this morning. Hi, Linda.
Hi there. My problem is I qualify for unemployment and a lot of grants and things from Small Business Association. I could not fill those applications out. I would get someone to fill it out for me. Then I'm not computer savvy. I'm 69 years old. I have three businesses. This is a new one. Renovated this building. And I didn't see the application come and say, you got this grant. Now complete the application. I don't know how to complete the application. I lost the grant. Our state has, we're lucky we have a lot of money to give out, but if you don't know how to fill out applications, and I can't be the only one that doesn't know how to do it, I am a mess because I am now exhausted all my savings. I've even reached out to our governor, well, our Senator Grassley. They are helping.
And so all of these policies and regulations that even are designed to help small businesses, Marissa, come with a lot of paperwork and a lot of small print that the business owner has to be really savvy. And it's also happening online.
Yeah, Linda, that is, you know, I've heard that from other small businesses as well. It does seem like, you know, some of the larger businesses have teams of people whose job is to fill out grant applications, and that's what they're trained to do. And so where does that leave the small businesses who might be a one-person show who are trying to fill out these forms and comply while also, you know, keeping themselves safe with the work that they're doing? You know, I think that you've really pointed to kind of the layers of stress that we are experiencing during a pandemic, and kind of how some folks are, you know, experiencing those to a greater degree due to, you know, their age or their their skills or what they've, you know, learned to use and how they can access the resources that are available. So, you know, I'm glad that you are being persistent and reaching out and trying to get the help you need. You know, and certainly I would hope that further kind of calls for funding make it in a more accessible format.
Marissa, how can employers do a better job of checking in with their workers right now?
Yes. So this is something that, you know, I've been thinking about a lot. So because it's especially for those at home, it's easy to feel like, you know, I don't know what anyone else is doing. You know, but I think just as you've said it, it's checking in. It's, you know, to the extent that you can, making sure that every worker knows who they should be going to if they have a concern, where they can get help if they have mental health concerns. There's a shipyard out here in Seattle. And one thing that they have done that, you know, is exemplary is that the general manager of the site, you know, has really made sure to reach out to everybody on the site, if only for a minute, just to kind of say, where are you at? What do you need? How are you feeling? And I think that's important. For folks who are working online, I think these kind of setting up a standing meeting with your manager, whether it's weekly or every other week, not necessarily to call in and talk about work, but to kind of just have a check-in of where are you at? What do you need? That really helps create a culture and a climate where the worker feels like they can air some of their grievances and share some of their concerns and maybe even get the help that they need.
I would imagine in your line of work as an occupational health researcher that this is just crunch time because there are so many things to study right now. What are you focusing on?
Yeah, so you're right. This is like a time where occupational health is really moving into kind of the forefront of public health, which is exciting from a research perspective and a public awareness perspective. You know, 6 months ago, not many people knew what an N95 was or knew what PPE was. So it has been exciting to see, you know, kind of occupational health becoming something that everyone is thinking about and the kind of the role of work in our economic health and in our public health. Right now, I'm focusing on some what I consider the more vulnerable populations of workers. I'm working with Uber drivers and other app-based drivers to try to understand their concerns and bus drivers, you know, and kind of the risk perceptions that are faced by those groups. I'm interested in stress. I think that stress is going to persist longer than the pandemic will. You know, I think the mental health burden is going to be around for much longer than the burden of COVID-19. So I'm interested how stress and mental health is exhibiting itself in workers who are working from home and workers who are not working from home. And I'm also working with grocery stores to kind of try to understand what controls they are using, what's working. Grocery stores have been open since day one. They've maybe changed their hours or changed their practices, but they have not closed. So that's another group that I've been working with.
Well, Marissa, we'll be watching. Thank you for joining us.
Yes, thank you for having me.
Marissa Baker is an assistant professor in the University of Washington Department of Environmental and Occupational Health Sciences. And if you missed any part of this conversation, you can listen back to it in its entirety at WPR.org/mornings. Just ahead, it's 1A. I'm Kate Archer Kent. This is The Morning Show, and you're listening to the Ideas Network.